Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. First on the dock today, there was a motions hearing regarding the Molly Tibbetts case yesterday. Second, what not to do when the verdict is announced. Trust but verify, especially your 15-year-old daughter. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Hey, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. As you can tell, yes, we are on the road again. For those who watched yesterday, we are in Cabo San Lucas, down here south of the border in Mexico. Lovely home that we're staying at. Only one problem. The Wi-Fi isn't great, so then I have to go back to this office area that they have. I guess it's where the router is, which is about the only place I can get a signal strong enough to stream, so that Frank, the hardest working man in show business, can produce the show. All right, let's get to it today. First on the docket, there was a motions hearing, and it was in regards to the Christian Bahena Rivera matter, and the judge is trying to determine whether he deserves a new trial, even though he was convicted of the 2018 killing of the Iowa college student, Molly Tibbetts. Now, the court held the hearing yesterday, and Bahena Rivera's attorneys called a couple of witnesses. This was to support their motion for a new trial. Now, sometimes when you file a motion, you just simply say, Judge, this is the legal reasoning, and this is why you should do what you need to do. But oftentimes, the judge has to have an evidentiary hearing to gather the evidence and to create the record. And that's what the court required, and that's what took place yesterday. Now, as a quick recap, Bahena Rivera has not yet been sentenced yet, and that is somewhat significant as to the timing of this hearing. Had Bahena Rivera been sentenced, then he would have to wait to go through appeals to try and have this hearing. But since he hadn't been sentenced and the court said, hey, let's have a hearing to resolve this matter now, have an evidentiary hearing so the court can make findings of facts and conclusions of law so that if there is an appellate issue, it can all be heard in the original filing, and you don't necessarily have to wait for post-conviction relief matters. It was actually a smart move on the part of the judge saying, let's just get this resolved now once and for all. As you may recall, and I said it was a little unusual, but Bahena Rivera claimed at trial that yes, he had lied to the authorities when he admitted to being responsible for the death of Tibbetts and then dumping her body in a cornfield. Rather, he testified that two unknown men appeared at his house early one evening and ordered him to drive until they encountered Tibbetts when she was out jogging. One of the two men exited the car and presumably was responsible for the death of Tibbetts. That man then returned to his vehicle and forced him to drive to pick up the body. Bahena Rivera testified to this at trial. It was kind of the first time. But as you may recall, his attorney stated that this has been his story from all along. Bahena Rivera also then testified that the men then told him where to dump the body and left him to deal with the mess. Bahena Rivera said he went along with this alleged scheme because he said the two unknown men threatened to kill his daughter and his daughter's mother if he told the police that they were involved. Now, prosecutors, not surprisingly, are absolutely convinced that Bahena Rivera is the killer and doesn't believe that this hearing is worth the time. Now, the first defense witness that was called was a deputy sheriff by the name of Joseph Meyer. Now, he testified that Scott Carter, a local sex offender, on Monday, July 26th, the day before the hearing, called the sheriff's department at 4 p.m. to complain that he was being allegedly harassed by relatives of Xavier Harrelson, a missing boy from the area. Now, the defense has tried to tie Xavier Harrelson's disappearance into the Tibbetts case by insinuating that a local group of individuals described invariably as a sex trafficking slash drug dealer slash murders and other criminal types could have been involved in both of these missing persons slash death cases. The next person to testify for the defense was an inmate. He is currently serving a sentence because he is serving a 21-day sentence in the county jail. And he states that an inmate with the Iowa Department of Corrections named several weeks ago in court papers, allegedly named Gavin Jones, was the other inmate and was responsible for the death of Molly Tibbetts. Now, according to Mackey, Jones admitted to stabbing Tibbetts to death with an associate by the name of Dalton Hansen as part of a sex trafficking case gone wrong. Mackey testified that he didn't believe Jones when he first heard the admission. He first thought, why would somebody tell something so heinous like this? Mackey apparently then wondered from the witness stand, I just thought he was trying to be tough. We set him up, Mackey testified, that Jones told him with reference to defendant Christian Bahena Rivera, the man accused of obviously killing and being convicted of killing Molly Tibbetts. Mackey testified that he forgot the name of a person allegedly described as big guy, dressed up and clean, who drove a new car to an Iowa trap house where women and girls were taken to be sexually assaulted. Now, Mackey told the court that he heard behind jailhouse walls that the sex trafficker who allegedly played a role in Tibbetts' disappearance had a wife and two daughters, and that the Tama, Iowa Police Department was in on it. Sounds a little far-fetched. Now, according to Mackey, Jones told him that there was some sort of shootout with police and that he saw Molly Tibbetts bound to a chair and gagged. Police were apparently looking for Tibbetts, according to Mackey, and they nearly found her, again, according to the alleged accounts from this Mr. Jones. He testified that they had to get rid of her, so he allegedly stabbed her to death. Mackey said the sex trafficker, who, according to his theory, was involved in Tibbetts' death. Mackey was able to provide limited details about the alleged end of Tibbetts' life, mostly that she was kept in a basement. Now, asked why he didn't share this story until the end of the jury trial, Mackey said he simply didn't believe Jones until he saw television coverage of Bahena Rivera testifying that he didn't kill Tibbetts, but rather was set up by two men. He then said he had a conscience and it told him to do something. Now, Mackey said he's not getting his sentence reduced. His release date is in December, and he's not being offered any promises for a shorter parole, money, or leniency. Now, I'm not exactly sure who would be giving him a shorter sentence because he's clearly not a prosecution witness, but I guess he's trying to state that he is unbiased and to trust him. Now, on cross-examination, and cross-examination, I have said, is the greatest truth-seeking tool ever. So, when asked on the stand on cross-examination, Mr. Mackey was not aware of the fact that this Mr. Jones, during the date of this alleged homicide, was actually in a rehab facility from December 2017 to July of 2018, and that he was in assisted living facility under court supervision after rehabilitation. Now, Tibbetts disappeared, is believed to have been killed on July 18th. Mackey said he was not aware of the fact that the person that he's claiming was involved in the death of Molly Tibbetts was basically in rehab. Now, in typical fashion, the inmate wanted to say something else. In fact, he stated that his thoughts and prayers were the Tibbetts family. The prosecutors tried to object to Mr. Mackey finishing his statements, but the judge shut him down and said you can't go any further. The defense submitted several other statements under seal. However, the judge did not immediately rule on this motion. It's going to probably be a little time for the court to get a copy of the transcript, assuming taking copious notes, but probably wants the transcript so that he can be as accurate as possible when making his findings of facts and conclusions of law. Now, asking for a new trial after the trial is ended, but before sentencing, there's still a heavy burden. First, the judge has to judge the credibility of the witnesses, look at the weight of the evidence that's being presented, and most importantly, has to judge whether the information would have changed the result or the outcome of the trial. This is going to be the tough part for the judge. hopefully, whichever way the judge rules, they make out a clear findings of facts and conclusions of law so that if there is an appeal, the court has a good record to do so. I personally do not think that the court is going to grant a new motion based upon the evidence that came out at the hearing. Easy to make the allegation in the motion. It's another thing to actually put forth sufficient evidence to warrant a new trial. We'll let you know how the court rules. Next on the docket, what not to do when the jury verdict is read. Well, Otis McCain, 36, was convicted of killing San Antonio police officer Detective Benjamin Marconi. Well, a jury, after only 25 minutes of deliberation, promptly convicted Mr. McCain. Perhaps it was the fact that Mr. McCain admitted to the killing of the detective because he was angry over an ongoing custody dispute with his wife. Well, look what Mr. McCain did. He strikes the bailiff after they were trying to put handcuffs on him after he was found guilty and the jury verdict was read. This is common practice. Anytime someone is convicted at a jury trial and they're taken back into custody, they're immediately told to put their hands behind their back, whether they've been in custody the whole time or not, and they are put with their hands behind their back. In this particular case, Mr. McCain, knowing that he was never going to be out of prison ever again, probably figured, what the heck, let's go for it. Didn't quite turn out so well. Unclear whether additional charges will be filed, but he is not endearing himself to the court and only confirms for a lot of people that perhaps he is a dangerous, dangerous man. Next on the docket, trust but verify, particularly your 15-year-old daughter. Authorities have located a 15-year-old girl at a Florida home with a much older gentleman who has a criminal record. Now, according to reports, the unidentified teenage girl from Texas told her parents that she was going to an all-inclusive church retreat in Florida for the month. When her parents were unable to reach the girl by phone after she left on the trip, they contacted police and reported her missing. Now, sources from the Charlotte County, Florida Sheriff's Office told investigators that they had traced the girl's phone and found that she pinged at a location in Port Charlotte. Police arrived at the location and they found the 15-year-old girl with a 38-year-old man by the name of Vincent Joseph Robusto. Once the police knocked on the door, they asked to speak with the girl. She came to the door. Mr. Robusto was taken into custody and they found handguns and ammunition at the house. He is a convicted felon, so he is a prohibited person from doing that. Now, color me suspicious just a little bit that the parents had no idea that the girl wasn't going to actually make it to the camp here. I think that she obviously had met Mr. Robusto online, and this was just a ploy. It makes me wonder how involved these parents were and didn't check it out. Now, to their credit, they did in fact report her missing to the police immediately, but maybe they want to spend a little more time with their kid, maybe check their phone. I get it, kids lie, but I'm telling you, when my kids live in my house, I could look at their phone at a moment's notice, and if they refused to do so, I would simply take it away until they gave me the password. You live under my house, you lived under my rules, maybe a little overprotective, but maybe that's because of what I do for a living. And certainly, if you're not sure what your kids are doing, you need to check it out. I'm telling you, it's a dangerous world out there, ladies and gentlemen. Dangerous, dangerous world. That's why we're going to run the commercial. Go to crimetalksearch.com, get that background subscription service. Check out the kids. Check out their parents, people they're playing with. I'm telling you, it's the best investment you will ever make. Let's take a quick recess.
Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did.
Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Please meet 56-year-old Glenn Hutchinson. That's right. He struck a 58-year-old disabled victim during a confrontation at an assisted living facility. Both men were there due to physical conditions. They were in rehab. Well, his roommate apparently sought to watch cartoons. Hutchinson preferred to view Monk, which is a police show. The pair's argument over the TV turned violent when Hutchinson hit the victim. That's right. He hit the victim with his cane. Now, when the police arrived, Hutchinson said that the victim drove his motorized scooter into his leg, prompting him to have to hit the victim in self-defense with the cane. Well, Mr. Hutchinson was arrested for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. That's right. Even that cane can be a deadly weapon. Have to be careful, ladies and gentlemen. He is on a $5,000 bond. Now, Mr. Hutchinson, I get it. You probably thought that you were doing okay, but you can't retaliate, leave marks. You contact the police if this guy ran into you and let them deal with it. And now you're not only dealing with your rehabilitation for your physical injuries, you've got to deal with a court case, if you can imagine that, at 56 years of age. Wow. But Mr. Hutchinson, if you are crowned the dumb criminal contestant of the week, competing with all our contestants throughout the week, that's right, you will win some cool Crime Talk swag, and we'll send you the lawyer shirt so you'll know what to do if the police talk to you. Keep your mouth shut. Lawyer. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for sticking out with us in Cabo. Hopefully the sound is okay. This is the room that I can only get the Wi-Fi to work the best, so I apologize. Otherwise, I would have shown you the beautiful view out here on the beach. All right. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.